Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the committee meeting for Immigration, Skills, and Labor. We're reconvening after yesterday's meeting. We had recessed. The clerk had circulated the minutes of the Resource Committee yesterday. If people could review the minutes, I'd like to ask an opportunity to see if there is a mover to accept the minutes. Moved by the member for Buren Granbank. All those in favor? Against? Carried. The meeting today, I thank the minister for coming back so quickly with his team of officials. We have allocated 1 hour of time for this meeting to conclude the estimates. So I would ask that committee members be somewhat brief in their preamble, but ask their pointed questions. And right now we're at section 4.1.01 is where we left off, up to 5.2.01 are the sections that we have to complete. We won't be doing introductions today because it would be the same members and the same staff and seated in the place for Hansard. So we will get things started immediately, and I will ask the clerk to call a subhead beginning at 4.1.01.
4.1.01 to 4.1.06 inclusive.
Shall 4.1.01 to 4.1.06 inclusive carry? Mr. Dinn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I thank the staff across the way for showing up for another day. I think if we had we didn't have our technical difficulties yesterday, we probably would have gotten through this. So look, I appreciate that, and I'll try and be as efficient as I can, and I'll expect the same, so it'll be we'll be fast and furious today. So I'm looking at, I think I've already dealt with 4.1.01. Most of the questions have been there. I do have, one question. In terms of the FPT, the Secretariat, how many years do we have left to host that?
Minister Byrne?
Byrne, thank you. So we have two secretaries, two national forums that we're currently chairing, the Forum for Labor Market Ministers, as well as the Atlantic Workforce Partnership, the AWP. I'm going to turn that over to Fiona, because I can't recall what the expiry date is for our term. I think one is soon. So
Fiona Langer, both of those will expire March 31st, 2021.
Thank you. Moving to 4.1.02, Office of Immigration Multiculturalism. I see there have been a fluctuation in the salaries, and we didn't spend what we budgeted for in 2019-20, but we're budgeting more than that in the current estimates. Can I get an explanation of that as well, please?
Sure. Byrne? So there are currently several positions which are experiencing vacancies, and they're recruiting their technical positions, their highly technical positions, with skill sets that are quite significant, and so but positions are being filled. We have on the salary side that we're taking it up a notch as well. I'll ask Donna if she might be able to give details on the salary components.
Dana Spurl.
Yes, as the minister indicated, we do have several vacancies that we had over the year, but recruitment is in progress for those. So that explains why the actuals were down a little. And next year in the budget, we created two new immigration program development officers, and that's reflected in next year's budget as well as the 27th pay period.
Thank you. What would be the full complement of staff once those are filled?
Currently, we have 18 positions, Dana Spurl, and 4 are vacant, but recruitment is in progress.
Thank you. I'm also looking at the federal revenue and provincial revenue. Can I get an explanation of where that's coming from or how it's generated?
Go ahead, Dana.
Ms. Burrell, the provincial revenue is directly related to processing fees on the provincial nominee program. So we had higher fees than anticipated, and it's projected to be about the same next year. The federal revenue of $1,412 is actually a prior year Government of Canada payment that came in late and is allocated there.
So when we see higher processing fees, that's a good thing, right?
Yes.
Right. Thank you. Moving over to 4.1.03, I'm looking at this. I know with the Labor Relations Board, there's two contractual positions there covered in there somewhere. One is for $104,000, one's for just under $74,000. Can I get an explanation of those, please?
Byrne? So the funding is provided for five staff at the Labor Relations Division in this particular line item. So there was some, there was a decision that was taken to, there was a workforce review that was conducted within the board itself, within the administration of the board. And so we use contractual positions. Dana, if there's something further that you might want to add to that?
No, I think that's it, but I defer to Debbie Dunphy on the contractual amounts.
Debbie Dunphy. So this is the Labor Relations Division in this particular heading. The two contractual positions you're referencing from the board, which is over in 4.1.06, one of those is the chair of the board, which is an appointment for 5 years. And the second one was a Labor Relations Board officer.
Thank you. Nope, been there, here. I know exactly where you're coming from. Thank you. I'm not going to get into, you know, given our time and that line by line on some of the amounts. I mean, they're all significant amounts, whether it's a dollar or $100,000. But just another question here in relation to transportation communications in both instances. I see for one, for standing fixed price setting panel, it went up in terms of actuals last year, whereas it was the reverse for the labor relations division. Can you explain what's happening in those two situations there?
I believe I can, Mr. Chair. Thank you. It's a very insightful question. On the transportation side, in terms of conciliation services, for our regular stream of conciliation services, that the number of conciliation services or requirements were down. We had less demand, and that's probably a good indicator of the labor environment at that particular. It's kind of a bellwether in some respects, I would imagine. On the fish pricing, so the transportation costs were down because there was less requirement. On the fish price setting panel, you know, it's really interesting. I just want to have a quick chat. I won't consume too much time, but it's worth an explanation as to why sometimes you hear a lot in the news and in public discourse about the fisheries and sort of, you know, a lack of harmony in terms of fish price setting. And there's a reason why, and it's worth the explanation, is that, you know, when you sign a collective agreement, when parties come together and sign a collective agreement, it's normally for a three-year agreement and lasts for an extended body of time. In fisheries, there are, if I recall, 13 species and that are constantly under review and susceptible to a price-setting panel review. Once that panel has conducted its, and I could be wrong on the 13, because there's some species that have a spring review and a fall review, and so it's, but anyway, the point being is that there's an awful lot of fisheries that are constantly potentially being in a bargaining situation. In addition to that, you also have a reconsideration. Both parties to the price setting process, the harvesters and the processors, can ask for reconsideration. So you have 13 more plus 13 more potential situations. So with that said, you can have in any one given year multiple meetings of the fish price setting panel to review fish price setting process. And that's why you hear about it in the news a lot. People often equate to disharmony in the fisheries, when in fact it's the process. Every year you can have upwards of dozens of panel meetings, and that's so. In that particular year, there were several meetings that had to occur. So that's an explanation that was given to me that I thought was pertinent to share.
Appreciate it. So that leads me to a question related. Have we looked at or explored opportunities of doing more of these reviews or more of these panels virtual?
They could be done virtually. It's, you know, the panels themselves are, you know, there's a set number of players, and it's kind of the usual players. That would be we'd want to make sure that the FFAW or SPONL, which are the two, you know, or the ASP or the parties to them would feel comfortable with a virtual panel. These are sometimes gritty events, gritty affairs. So, I think it would be warranted, and whether or not the chair and the members of the panel would see fit to that. But I recognize that point.
Appreciate that. I'll squeeze one more in, because I think I misread it the first time. But the professional services under the standing price setting panel, I know it jumped last year. You may have already discussed it in that preamble you just spoke on, but it went up to 95,000 as opposed to the 77,000 professional services in 4.1.04.
So in that particular, the panel does receive expert opinion reports on marketing, on fish prices, and so on. For example, Sacton & Associates is often contracted to provide market reports, Erner Barry, and other things. And I think that would cover what those professional services would include.
Spurl. Yes, there is often professional services engaged. This also speaks to the three panel members on the fish price setting panel and their travel and stipends. And due to the number of hearings held last year, professional services were a little higher.
Again, my point on virtual.
Thank you, Mr. Dinn. Ms. Coffin.
Thank you, and thank you, everyone, for coming back. It's much appreciated. Okay, let's start with 4.1.01. It says here it provides for the development and dissemination of labor market information, resources, and services. Can you give me a list of what those resources and services that are under development or dissemination are?
Jenny, you can proceed.
Yes, I don't have that list in front of me, but I can certainly
you can send it along.
Get it for you.
Awesome.
Sure.
Much
yes.
Appreciated. Thank you, Dana. Do we have a skilled worker inventory? Are we still managing that? I know once upon a time there was some talk of it. Does such a thing exist?
I'm not familiar with it myself. We can endeavor to get back to you.
Okay, that'd be lovely. I know for some time we had talked about what skills and resources are available in the province. That way you can match the need to the resources available. So that would be a good thing to follow up on. Foster creation of employment opportunities, recruitment, retention, and training of skilled workers. Let's see. So are we collecting any data on skilled workers at all? Or what data do you collect to help inform the decisions in this particular area?
In terms of labor relations?
Just in terms of, I guess, anything that would help the work of this particular entity.
The Economics and Statistics Agency would be the conduit for the collection of a lot of that data. We do use the Economics and Statistics Agency to, or division to assist us in labor market planning and labor market evaluation. So we're not the agency to collect the data. Most of that is conducted through that agency and, of course, through Statistics Canada.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. In terms of grants and subsidies, do you have a breakdown of all the grants and subsidies that have been awarded in the past and the criteria for accessing those? I'm a little curious about if someone was to get money under that, how would they get it? What are the criteria for evaluating the applications? And who has received the money in the past?
Yeah, this may be sort of out of the norm in terms of grants and subsidies. This is funding is provided for Forum of Labor Market Ministers, the FLMM, which is amounts to 1.8 million. So, Dana, would you be able to expand on that particular element?
Yes, Dana Spurl. So the minister's correct. That's predominantly Forum of Labour Market Ministers that we're the lead province for in the Secretariat.
Right.
That's the mechanism by which they fund their working groups. For.
Okay. Yeah. So it's a lot of FPT. I think I may have been involved in some of that at one point.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Lovely. let's go to 4.1.02. I guess I can move anywhere here. The grants and subsidies here. What are the criteria for the distribution of those or the administration of those?
So funding under this burn. So funding under this line item is for grants to qualifying groups and organizations to enhance the implementation of the Immigration Action Plan with a focus on attraction and retention of new immigrants. So we can definitely give you a listing of who has received any grants and contributions under this particular line item.
And the criteria for being able to access it as well, please?
Sure.
And now I note that the funding has been cut quite substantially, $400,000. What's the rationale behind that?
In the grant, in which?
Grants and subsidies under immigration and multiculturalism.
Dana, I'm going to get you or Ramsey if you want to plow through that one.
Dana Spurl. Some of this is grant funding actually that was in place for the first couple of years of the action plan. So it's since those initiatives are complete, we haven't budgeted for it again in the out years of the action plan. Also, some of the money in grants had been transferred up to professional services, so it's no longer reflected in the actual is a little different because it should have been reflected in professional services for a social media campaign. So it's a little bit of an accounting a transaction that's not clear here.
Sure. Okay. I guess, all right, talking about the whole pocket of money, what strategies, and it says implement strategies on immigration, what strategies are being implemented?
That's a pretty broad question. The strategies would be, I think articulated best within the Immigration Action Plan. There's a number of different elements to the action plan, and we can certainly provide you with a copy of that entire plan.
That'd be wonderful. Okay, let's talk about the Immigration Action Plan. What are the updates on those? Do you have any updates in terms of any recommendations that have been made or the implementation of the action plan or even the efficacy of the plan? Like, are we recruiting and retaining individuals in Newfoundland and Labrador? Do you have any of those numbers?
We do. I appreciate the question because it has been said that our retention in Newfoundland and Labrador lags behind our Atlantic, our maritime partners, when in fact Newfoundland and Labrador's retention of new Canadians, of landed immigrants, has actually been quite stellar. It's been, I think the statistics will present that we are the second highest within Atlantic Canada in terms of retention, with PEI being the lowest. It's one thing to attract new Canadians, new landed immigrants. It's another thing to retain them. And what we do is we take deliberate efforts to make sure that retention is as easy and as seamless as possible. And what we find in Newfoundland and Labrador is that there's less of what some might call, others might call, a revolving door. We have, I believe it's at 52% at this point in time, our overall three-year average on retention over the last number, dating back the last 3 years. but either Dana or we might refer to Ramsey on retention on retention results.
Dana Spurl, yes. For the three-year average, Newfoundland and Labrador is 52%, and for the five-year average, we're 50%, which is on par with many of the other Atlantic provinces. The only one higher would be Nova Scotia at 66% on the five-year average. And, sorry, many of the grants and subsidies that you asked about earlier are directed toward community organizations in terms of settlement and integration programs to try to bring up that retention rate. Our greatest success is in the family class, and we actually have 74% retention rate for family immigrants who come as family class.
Okay, and thank you for that. Can I have the absolute numbers? Relative is good, but unless you have absolutes, that's a little bit different. Like, do we have a target, and are we hitting that target, and in terms of the number that we actually recruit, and then what is our retention rates after that? It certainly sounds like it went up slightly from in the three-year version versus the five-year version, but it'd be nice to see what the absolute numbers are, if we're hitting our targets. Where are people coming from, and which ones are staying? And I think that might be some useful pieces along the way. Are you able to provide such a list?
We can speak to it now, I think.
Sure.
Of course, this being estimates is normally a budgetary exercise examining budgets, not policy or policy performance, but I think it would be worthwhile speaking to this. And Dana, I don't know if you have the information available immediately, or if Ramsey might, but please proceed with it.
Sure, Dana Spurl. So we actually have 1,850 permanent residents in 2019, which is January to December. So we've exceeded the target that we had set, and we've increased our target to 2,500 by 2022. As you know, with COVID and many of the international, you know, travel restrictions, we're still hoping this year. We're a little behind, but we're still hoping to achieve that target for 2022. In terms of some of the breakdown data around where immigrants are coming from, I'd have to defer to Ramsey to see if we capture it at that level, but we can certainly give you absolute numbers. We have that available.
That'd be great. And if you have the opportunity to break it down by perhaps occupation or even gender might be interesting as well, because it'd be nice to see if we're recruiting doctors and keeping doctors. That would be lovely.
Sure.
Or, you know, any range. I mean, is it engineers or is it computer support specialists or whatever? So if you have that, that would be wonderful data to see. Thank you. Okay. We can come back. I only have a moment.
Mr. Dan.
Thank you. Just on the immigration numbers, and I know when we talk retention, there's really your retention numbers and your retention rate. And I know we do very well on our retention rate, but still we really need more and more immigrations. And I know I'm preaching to the choir on this one. So I'm glad to see that we've increased our target to 2,500. I would suggest, and I'm sure, again, preaching to the choir, that we probably need to go higher than that, but you got to start somewhere. So thank you for that, and we are moving in the right direction there. Thank you. Just looking at, I think I've left at the Labor Relations Board. So labor standard, I'm looking at 4.1.05, labor standards, and right there again, provincial revenue. Can I get a description on that? What's involved there?
Labor standards revenue is achieved through a $50 clearance fee. These can relate to both private and business transactions in law firms. In law firms, require verification that there's nothing to impede the current transaction from proceeding. The certificates confirm that there is no liability involving parties to the transaction arising from actions investigations of the Labor Standards Division. So that's the source of that revenue.
Thank you for that. And I'm not going to get into the transportation communication because I think that's fairly consistent over division. Just back, I think Ms. Dunphy mentioned this, the contractual position falls under the Labor Relations Board, is that correct? Okay, thank you for that. we're fine with that one. Moving right along. So we're into apprenticeships and trades, 5.1.0. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm trying to move us along too quickly. Okay, pass it along.
I still have fours. Thank you.
And
thank you very much. And for the record, I may ask some policy questions because a budget is a manifestation of policy. So the budget, if we don't have the rationale for the policy, then it's pretty hard to rationalize the expenditures in the budget. So that is why I will ask policy questions. Let's go back to, pursuant to the Immigration Action Plan, is the department pursuing other measures to help immigrants integrate into Newfoundland Labrador society, such as combating racism, facilitating workplace-based language training, as mandated by the Premier? So I guess that, has that been incorporated into this budget?
Byrne.
Mr. Byrne.
So thank you, and we're more than delighted to answer questions on policy. However, just I note that when we answer questions on policy in an estimates meeting, it does chew up, it does consume time. So
absolutely,
it's a choice that fair for you to take that choice. But of course, there's a limited amount of time. So with that said, you asked the question as to whether or not we are employing various measures to look at racism, to look at English as a second language within the workplace. So we have several partners that are extremely effective developing, working with new Canadians that may have language skill issues, but also we're encouraging workplace-based English as a second language in particular, or French. But we're obviously concentrating on English predominantly, but we're open and very flexible to both official languages. On racism, I think there's no more pertinent a topic in Newfoundland and Labrador and Canada right now than movements towards anti-racism. I pride myself on championing, with all my imperfections, championing this particular cause. And we'll be stalwart in championing this particular cause. There are two fundamental aspects of racism that I think it's incumbent upon us all to recognize. There is a racism based on ethnic group and racism based on color, amongst other considerations. And then there's also racism based on Indigenous. The two are similar in some respects, but they're not the same. Indigenous racism is something which is, I think we have to reflect the character, the sociology, the culture, and the nature of our First Nations, both Innu and Métis. And so we have to employ different strategies and different recognitions in terms of racism on Indigenous, racism against those of color, those of different ethnic origin, is something which is equally serious, but is different in its characterization and nature, and we have to recognize that. So within the government itself, within immigration skills and labor, my concentration is on battling and combating, educating against, and providing awareness to against racism on color, working with my colleague, the minister responsible for Indigenous, we're working on as well. We're working collaboratively on racism strategies against racism against people, Indigenous First Nations.
So there has been some appropriations made for addressing racism and work-based language training built into the budget. Good, thank you. I note that a number of people in recent months, many immigrant families have decided to leave, citing lack of opportunity. Has that been specifically addressed in here, or is that something that's on the radar to be developed under the Office of Multiculturalism and Immigration?
Sorry if I'm not quite clear on the question. And in terms of people there have been choices. People mm-hmm. people have left Newfoundland and Labrador who obtained their landed immigrant status on the basis of economic opportunities or choices made elsewhere. That's I think that's part of our 48%, that in terms of our resettlement, we're very pleased, very proud of our statistics, our 52%, but we always know we can do better. But there are 48% that do leave, and they do leave for various reasons. I think predominantly it's because of economic opportunity. They see a different economic opportunity elsewhere. And that's one of the things that we're working collaboratively in an intergovernmental approach to help resolve.
Wonderful. I look forward to seeing that. Okay. In terms of, let's keep going. Labor standards, 4.1.05. What are some of the current activities in terms of, I guess, some of the complaints that you're receiving? Do you have an overview of some of the types of things that you are addressing under labor standards? And I know that they can range from I'm not getting paid the right amount of overtime to, I guess, you know, PPE hasn't been appropriately provided, or maybe even as far as the protections that were supposed to be afforded under COVID did not get implemented appropriately. So do you have any summary of the types of activities that are currently being addressed under labor standards?
We do. It's the activities of the Labor Standards Division is guided by, it's directed by the Labor Standards Act and its consequential regulations. So the Act does describe in, you know, in specific detail things such as wage recovery, notice of termination, minimum wage, sickness, maternity leave, employment of children, and other aspects. The division also monitors the Shops Closing Act, so these are it's often complaint driven. And that's why we have a group of very highly skilled, very well-trained professionals that adjudicate many of these circumstances.
Wonderful. I'm looking now for a summary of some of the nature of activities that these highly trained professionals are looking into. So if you could provide that, whether or not it's in your briefing booklet, but if there's a summary at some point, that would be just lovely to have a look at, please. Have you received any complaints regarding provision of personal protective equipment and the employment of essential employees since COVID has occurred?
I'll defer that question to Dana.
Dana Spurl. Just in with respect to your other question, mm-hmm. We have received in 2019-20, we received 10,763 requests for service
wow.
within this division.
10,000.
So it's quite active division.
Yep.
And yes, during COVID, some of those requests were along, you know, the requirement to wear masks and the responsibility of the individual versus the requirements of employers. But requests also revolve around mediation, investigation, adjudication services, prevention intervention. So staff did 93 workplace visits last year. Mm-hmm. We do awareness seminars and training as well. They did 28 seminars last year with like 633, I think, participants. So there's a whole range of services that are requested under that division, and they are quite active.
Okay, lovely. Well, I look forward to seeing that summary.
We can give you a full summary.
And I knew you would. I know
yes.
you're keeping the data. I appreciate that. So there's 10,000 cases that you had come in or
Requests for service.
I'm sorry. So you had 10,000 come in. What's the caseload right now? Of the ones that had some have been resolved, I guess some have been held over, and there must be a wait list for service. 10,000, and you got a staff that's being paid $500,000. So I can imagine they are well burdened.
Go ahead, Dan.
Dana Spurl. Many of them are in progress. We have about 47 that have been carried over because of some of the complicating nature of the requests, but they are all divided out to the various officers and they are in progress.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any plans to conduct a statutory review of the Labor Standards Act?
We have not established a plan for a specific review of the Labor Standards Act per se, but we do note that it has been the period of time since a comprehensive review has been conducted. And in my own discussions with members of the labor movement, it was indicated to me that of the most the greatest value and the higher priority would be placed on labor standards as opposed to labor relations for engagement of a review exercise.
Ms. Coffin, are you almost concluded your questions in the
almost
session?
Almost.
I'm just, maybe then what we can do is we can go to Mr. Dean. I'll ask the clerk to call 5.1.01 and 5.2.01 so you can ask your questions on apprenticeship and training, and then we can go back to Ms. Coffin and it'll be open.
As long as we are doing abiding by the appropriate protocol, that will be fine with me.
5.1.01 to 5.2.01 inclusive.
5.1.01 to 5.2.01 inclusive. Shall they carry? Mr. Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate you jumping to that section. However, I'm going to jump to some general questions first, get them in before I forget them, but I do appreciate I'll get to the 5.1.01. Some general questions. Of course, we already agreed we're getting a copy of the minister's briefing binder. I think we already talked about zero-based budgeting in previous questions. Question, are there any errors in the published estimates that might have been overlooked?
My gut reaction would be to say no. However, I will ask my deputy minister to certify that no.
Fiona Langer.
Fiona Langer. There may actually be some minor errors. Of course, going through the budget process as we did this time around was somewhat different than in previous years. So given the time constraints, in particular on the Department of Finance, there may be some minor errors, but nothing of any substance or circumstance. Debbie, would you like to add?
Yeah, I can confirm that the actuals for 2019-20, they've been reviewed and submitted to the Comptroller General's office, and they've confirmed, I mean, there's certainly no material errors. And to speak to Fiona, there are, you know, we're all human. There's obviously an opportunity, but certainly nothing that would be deemed material in nature.
Thank you, and I would. And if something comes up, I assume you let us know. The clock, yeah, I just about to say. Thank you. No, thank you for that. How many people are currently employed with the department?
Fiona?
Debbie Dunphy.
At March 31st, we had 582. So since then, now again, it's always a moving target, because people have come and go. Mm-hmm. Some people, you know, retire. So we did have a transfer of some of, with the reorganization in August, we did have a transfer of some staff to education. But right now we're around the 560 would be a good estimate.
Thank you. And I believe earlier we talked about 6 retirements. I think some of the vacancies that are not filled, there have been some that have been abolished, some positions that have been abolished. I'm not sure if you talked about those positions that were abolished. What do you know what they were?
Debbie Dunphy.
I do, and if I don't have them here, I can certainly endeavor to provide that for you. Yeah, I don't have my list, but
that's fine. In the essence of time, then please, thank you. Layoffs. Did we have any layoffs over the last year in the department?
Not as a result of, shortage of work. So I would say no.
Thank you. Now, I know I talked about some contractual employees that earlier on. How many short-term employees do we have?
11.
11.
By short term, I'm assuming you mean the quote 13-weeker. 11.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And with regards to the contingency fund, has this department received any amount of that, and for what?
In 2021, we have not.
No. Okay.
No. Pardon me. No. Sorry, Mr. Dean. So you're aware of the essential worker support program. So that's federal funding,
yeah.
And we are receiving that from the Department of Finance and through the federal government. So I'm not sure if that's coming through the contingency. That may be coming through the contingency funds or finance, but it is being funded by the federal government.
Okay, appreciate that. Thank you.
My apologies.
No, not a problem. And you might have touched on this already, but with advanced education moving to the Department of Education, has this had any impact on the department in any way?
Well, obviously, that's some.
To what extreme?
Well, it's very minimal in the sense that we still maintain a strong linkage with the Department of Education on post-secondary training as part of our post-secondary education as part of the training regime. We still maintain apprenticeships. We still maintain various programs. Our core mandate, and this is what makes the department what makes the department and its structure relatively unique, and I believe much envied within the Canadian Federation, is the integration of employment supports with income security, income assistance. This is one of the aspects. We are one of the few jurisdictions to have combined that capacity. I think it makes infinite sense to make a Department of Education from early childhood to post-secondary and to lifelong learning, including adult basic education being housed in the Department of Education, and us being a workplace economic division, department. So yes, there have been obviously some changes. Our staffing component within post-secondary education itself was not particularly bulky. It was not huge. So that staffing component moves to the Department of Education. But I think this is from a machinery government point of view. I think it was a prudent move.
Thank you for that. I think I'm quite aware. I think Mr. Maven will agree because we've been around government. Came in when it was career development, advanced studies, and is after going through how many iterations since then. So that's all good. Okay, back to 5.1.01. I'm looking at apprenticeship and trade certification, and I'm looking at the purchase services. We went from 63.5 budgeted in 2019-20, and it jumped to almost 900,000. Of course, now it's dropped down to just over 160. Can I get an explanation of that, please?
Sure. So the bulk of this funding, actuals being up by $822,941. This increase is due to additional funding required to finish the apprenticeship management information system in this fiscal year. The savings came from within the division as well as other areas of the department.
Thank you. So we got a new AIMS program? And if we do, which is great, is it possible to get a current breakdown of apprentices, the latest breakdown of our apprenticeship in terms of who's active and the journey persons, the trade qualifiers and such?
I think we can. Walter, is that?
Walt Maven, absolutely. We can provide that for you.
Thank you for that. Also on that note, in terms of, because I know COVID has created quite havoc, especially when you're talking about industrial trades and that, in terms of a lot of hands-on required. Can we get a breakdown of how many have challenged exams during the COVID period and what pass rates were?
Well, Maven, yes, we can provide that as well.
Okay, appreciate that. And included in that, I wouldn't mind seeing those that have done rewrites as well. Is that an issue?
Well, Maven, just to clarify, you're asking for the information on a per-trade aggregate level?
Please, yeah. Okay. Thank you. Looking at, again, back to 5.101, apprenticeship trades, I'm seeing there's federal revenue and there's provincial revenue. Can I get an explanation of those two? That's in the 5.101.
Yes. A burn? So the revenue related, the federal revenue is related to the Apprenticeship Harmonization Project. This is $408,000 of federal revenue. And Advancing Women in Apprenticeships, which is $66,000 in federal revenue. And in terms of the provincial side, the revenue related to the registration from the apprenticeship exams, trade qualifier applications and certificate renewals encompasses the provincial revenue.
Thank you for that. Just a question then on that. So can I interpret this, and again, those figures for the provincial revenue, they're declining there. Is that due to less registrations, or is that a decline in registrations, apprenticeship registrations?
I'll ask Walt, if you would.
Walt Maven, no, not entirely. In fact, is a result in part of a decision that was made by the department with respect to the recertification of certificates, which previously there was an expiry date on those. The decision was made to certify those with no expiry date, and that included close on 11,000 certificates at a cost of about $50 per. So that made up for part of the reduction in the revenue there.
Thank you. Moving down to training programs. And I apologize, I know I asked the questions and you're over there saying he knows the answer, but I gotta ask him on this, so I know. So the federal programming, the amount of money that went to industrial training was 8,000 was approved. Of course, 47 something was used, and we dropped it down to 6,000. So can you explain that figure, but also explain why we've dropped it down? Is it the result of less training?
Well, Maven, yes, it is. It is a result of less demand for that particular activity. So we had budgeted in 1928 $8 million, and as noted there, where our expenditures came in a little over five. So this year, we've budgeted $6 million based on what we anticipate the level of activity is going to be. And in part, this refers back to yesterday's conversation because the funding for this comes from the Labor Market Development Agreement. So that $2 million that we adjusted last year was put back into the main LMDA budget to be allocated across other priority areas.
So one quick question. I guess with our LMDA funding, because I know it's sort of a use it or lose it type of fund. We haven't had any issues in terms of utilizing that full amount, not just here, but overall?
Well, Maven, we have had years, previous years there have been smaller amounts. For example, in 2018-19, I think the amount was a little over $200,000 on over $130 million budget. So you're correct that there was no carry forward provision under the LMDA up until this year. In response to COVID, the federal government has provided some flexibilities to the jurisdictions, and part of that will be a carry forward provision under the Labor Market Development Agreement.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dan. And now we'll move to Ms. Coffin for her final 10-minute allocation.
Thank you. We should be able to do that. Let's hope so. Under Labor Relations Board, so just flipping back to that briefly, I just get a sense of how many cases, I guess, or what are the activities of the Labor Relations Board broken down by, I guess, broad categories? I mean, are they adjudicating? Are they doing mediation? Are they doing conciliation? So some sense of the numbers of activities being undertaken broken down by activity type.
Okay. Bern, I'll ask Debbie Dunphy if she can elaborate on some of the
Certainly. So while I don't have the numbers, I can certainly provide those to you in a follow-up. But they do, they process a various numbers of types of applications. So it could be certification of trade unions, the imposition of first collective agreements, a revocation of a certification, unfair labor practices, basically complaints throughout the Labor Relations Act, and some as well. They also have jurisdiction over the Occupational Health and Safety Act. So those are the types, but we can certainly provide you the number of cases.
Lovely, thank you. I appreciate that. Going over to apprenticeship and trade certification, I note that the department was mandated to provide better access to online training and services for apprenticeships and trade certification. Can you provide an update on your progress in that area?
We certainly can. So there was a number of different activities that that were undertaken. Some very, very successful. I'll ask, I believe, Walter, if you want.
Walt Maven.
Yes, and I guess the primary initiative that we're about to see come to fruition is the development of our apprenticeship management system, which essentially is going to take a heavily paper-based system and digitize and put that online, which will create significant efficiencies for apprentices, JPs, employers, and training institutions. You know, for example, just the whole notion of the physical logbooks that today apprentices have to have in their possession and, you know, getting the JPs to sign off on, all that process will be online.
And that will lead us to having that skills trade database, because I imagine if you become an apprentice, we can potentially continue on and have a better sense of how many carpenters and how many welders and how many plumbers we have. And I think that will certainly help us adjust our labor market outlooks along the way. Thank you.
If I could, just on that point, yes, that that will be part of it. But I guess to an earlier question in terms of the collection of data on skilled trades people, we do that every day in terms of the interactions that we have with all of our clients across a myriad of programs and services where we're case managing clients.
Yeah.
Part of that case management process, of course, is a collection of data in terms of their skills to date, any skills that they acquire, and so on. So there's also a repository of information through that as well.
Wonderful. Love data. Thank you. All right. That's grant. May I have a list of the grants and subsidies, people who have received the grants and subsidies, and some criteria around how that is awarded and how one might apply to it? So I assume you have that for at least last year?
Yeah. So so this, the grants and subsidies, just so we're clear, this is for the hiring of apprenticeships, the program, with a number of different boards and commissions, and as well for advancing women in apprenticeships. So the government has a deliberate program to hire apprentices within the government program, so within the government operations. So Walter, I don't know if there's a little bit more clarity you can offer.
Yeah, and Walt Bavin, that's correct, Minister. So the government hiring apprenticeship program, you know, so apprentices are hired through Newfoundland Housing, health boards, and so on.
Right.
That's the bulk of the funding that's provided through the grants and subsidies.
Oh, okay. So this is a subsidy for government to hire apprentices. So government subsidizes government. Okay. All right. Training programs, I note that comes from the LMDA, so that's reasonable there. Yeah, I think I'm okay on these. So if you would like to call these, and then we'll have some time to do 6.1.01.
We did 6.1.01 and voted on it.
Oh, right. Yes, we did that. Oh.
So if you have a few additional questions you'd like to ask.
No, I think that might be the end of the questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Coffin. I will ask the clerk, for consistency, we'll call 4.1.01 to the end of 4, then we'll call 5, and then we'll start from the beginning and call 1.1 to 6.1 inclusive, because we've had a pause session.
4.1.01 to 4.1.06 inclusive.
Shall 4.1.01 to 4.1.06 inclusive carry? All those in favor?
Aye.
Against? Carried.
5.1.01 to 5.2.01 inclusive.
Shall 5.1.01 to 5.2.01 inclusive carry? All those in favor?
Aye.
Against? Carried.
1.1.01 to 6.1.01 inclusive.
Shall 1.1.01 to 6.1.01 inclusive carry? All those in favor?
Aye.
Against? Carried. Shall the total carry? All those in favor?
Aye.
Against? Carried. Well, I'd like to thank everybody and thank Minister Byrne and his staff at Immigration, Skills and Labor for all their information that they provided the committee here today. An incredible team of people that you have working for you. I've had the privilege of working with them as well, Minister Byrne. And I'd also like to recognize MHA Din and MHA Coffin for their questions in committee, and also additional MHA Din in the previous session, as well as the committee members, the MHA for Buren Grand Bank, the MHA for Lake Melville, the MHA for Cartwright-Led Sinclair, and the MHA for Virginia Waters Pleasantville. I'll give Mr. Din an opportunity, if he'd like, to just say some closing remarks to thank the members.
Thank you. I appreciate it, and I do appreciate staff coming out again to get through this. As you know, we represent the people, and as we all MHAs do, and we have to ask questions and have to deal with any discrepancies. So I appreciate the answers. They were very concise and precise. I do want to just go back to a discussion during our initial half, where we talked about empathy in terms of our staff. I worked with a lot of these people over the years, and you know, I can attest to them, attest to everyone, that fabulous staff, fabulous people to work for. And I just want to say, not to misconstrue, that the empathy I think that we discussed was dealing more with programming in general. You know, how you got to look at programs and adjust them. And I mean, they're not static. They got to be constantly changing. But I certainly can attest to the staff. And I had worked through a couple of general strikes where I had to go front line for social workers. And I guarantee you, it's a very admirable profession. It has its rewards, but it's also a very stressful profession. So I applaud anyone who's working with clients such as those who are the most vulnerable, as well as in this time of COVID, those who are looking for jobs and who have been put out of work. It's very difficult to deal with them. You have your programs that have their parameters, and certainly our staff do the best they can to serve that. So my closing remark is, I hope we still continue to look at programs and services as something that we can constantly change and improve, and be a little more flexible, especially in this trying time, in terms of trying to make sure everyone has an opportunity to be the best they can be. But again, I thank you for the extra time that we had today to do this, and carry on with what you're doing.
Ms. Coffin.
Thank you very much, and I won't take very long. I want to thank everyone for their time, their dedication, their professionalism, and I'm sure you know, but for the record, my asking about policy and asking the pointy questions is not about, you know, addressing your work. It's about making sure, for the record, that we as government are doing our appropriate duties and making sure that the right things get done. So thank you very much for being forthcoming and open about that. And recognizing the times that we are in, I well imagine that your roles are going to be grown quite substantially, because we are going to see a great deal of demand, I imagine, for a lot of the services provided by this particular department. So you have my support in making our way through this next part. So thank you very much again for your time. And I think maybe you can have a big sigh of relief now, because estimates is over for you. So thank you very much.
Thank you, MHA's Coffin and Din. I have one other thing to add. Shall I report the estimates of the Department of Immigration, Skills and Labor carried without amendment? All those in favor? Against? Carried. We passed the yesterday's minutes at the beginning of the meeting. That was voted on. So the final motion that I have to ask for is for a mover to adjourn. And she's very quick off the with this one, the MHA for Cartwright-Led Sinclair. And we conclude our meeting exactly on time, really, just at 11:59.